Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
From executive producer Jimmy Kimmel.
What's up, team? Just two people can't launch a brand. It takes a village.
We are MMD Hollywood.
Wowee.
Which stands for medical marijuana.
Due to restrictions, we can't tell you everything about our new reality series. But what we can say is the idea behind it is fully baked.
I don't know.
High Hopes. Streaming 4/20 on Hulu.
You ready for this?
Oh, I'm very ready.
I'm so excited. Okay, ready?
You ready?
Three, two, one.
Now, here's a look at what's sunny across Central Florida on 105.9 Sunny FM. Here's your host, Michael Rafferty.
Coronavirus is a bronchial disease that affects the lungs. But what are the effects on the lungs, long-term and short-term? Well, joining us by phone to talk about it is Dr. Ashraf Luckman. Dr. Luckman is from the Oviedo Medical Center. Dr. Luckman, thanks for being on Sunny Across Central Florida.
Thank you for having me.
All right, so everybody, you know, we know that every day we're learning something new about the coronavirus, but we do know it's a flu-like thing, but it mainly affects the lungs and the breathing. Is that accurate, or is there more to it?
Yeah, in a way. So, like, for a lot of patients, it acts like sort of a common cold symptom. So people will have sore throat, they have a little bit of shortness of breath, they will have fevers. We've had even some patients have GI symptoms. You know, they don't have any respiratory symptoms, but they come in with abdominal pain or diarrhea or nausea. And for the, like you said, for the majority of patients, they're either asymptomatic or have very minimal symptoms.
All right, so let's dive into that part, because like you said, most people presents like a flu, but then there are folks with these pre-existing conditions that perhaps it attacks in a different way.
Mm-hmm. There's two problems with it. Number one, it is extremely contagious, and a lot of patients are either minimally symptomatic or asymptomatic. And so that creates a problem with transmission, right? And then in some patients who are mostly the vulnerable, but to be honest with you, I've had personally patients who are not really sick or have comorbidities, it turns into this inflammation at both lungs, like a very, very severe pneumonia. And this pneumonia consumes the lungs to the point that the lungs are not able to do their job in exchanging air or getting oxygen from the air. And so these patients show up to the hospital with very low oxygen levels, and a number of them require ventilation or artificial life support with a ventilator to breathe for them.
So some of these pre-existing conditions that it affects, obviously, I would imagine, would be somebody with, say, asthma, right?
Sure. Yeah, asthma, lung disease like COPD, patients who have emphysema, which is another lung disease, patients who have cardiac disease and other conditions. Although, to be honest with you, we've seen a lot. I've seen a number of patients who are not necessarily sick. You know, it would be a 50-year-old, 60-year-old who may have a little bit of a high blood pressure and high cholesterol, but nothing else. So I just want to make sure we stress to people that just because you're healthy, it doesn't mean that you cannot develop the life-threatening component of it. Now, what helps us survive, so let's say you catch even a regular pneumonia or you catch the regular flu, the sicker you are when you catch that disease, the less likelihood that is your, the less your chances of survival are. So you have two people. One is a 20-year-old marathon runner who is very healthy, and the other one is an 80-year-old patient with heart disease and lung disease. They catch the same exact bacteria or fungus or virus. One of them could recover at home in a few days, and the other one is, you know, life and death in the ICU. It doesn't mean that that patient, the second one, caught a worse disease. It's the same disease, just the body was not in a shape, good enough shape to deal with it, to deal with the consequences of that disease. So there's two components, the virus itself or the pathogen, and how virulent or how severe it is, but also the host, you know, how did it find the host and what condition is the host, and are they able to fight this?
All right, so let's talk about the symptoms that you would get if you need hospitalization. When do you need to think about going to the hospital?
So basically, if someone has a low-grade fever and they're having a little sore throat and they're otherwise healthy and they feel okay, I would say for the most part, if you're able to get to see your doctor via telehealth, they can order the test, isolate yourself and hydrate and take care of yourself. Now, however, if the thing becomes labored, if you're having trouble finishing sentences, if you have by any chance access to a pulse oximeter, these little devices you can buy over the counter, which will check your oxygen saturation in your blood, and, you know, by just clipping it on your finger, they're like $20. And if you have oxygen level below, I would say 91, then that'd be a concern. Obviously, it also depends on who you are. So let's say you're, again, a 20-year-old marathon runner, and otherwise you feel okay, you're most likely going to do okay. But if you are elderly, you have a lot of comorbidities, I would say your threshold for being evaluated should be lower. So you shouldn't wait till the last second when it's a dire emergency. So again, I would recommend that anyone who has these kind of symptoms contact their physician first. Luckily, these days, most of us are available via telehealth, so you don't have to leave your own turn. They can go over things with you to determine what you need. But obviously, if in doubt, I think people are advised to seek attention at an ER or urgent care if they're having significant symptoms that are worrying them.
I imagine all of us at some point have had a bronchial sickness, and it's the coughing and the, you know, the can't clear your throat and all that. How do you differentiate that between just, say, a standard flu?
Very difficult, to be honest with you. I mean, up to that point, including the flu, and we still have patients who get truly sick from the flu. So, you know, I've had people say, thank God they don't have COVID, they just have the flu. Yes, thank God you're doing better, but, you know, you still could die from the flu. So it is very difficult to tell them apart, and that's what, you know, prompts, you know, a lot of the challenges when it comes to testing. The really only way to tell it apart from other viruses is the actual PCR, the swabs. That will be the gold standard now that we have. So I would say if you're having cough, if you are unable to clear your throat, and it's not going away quickly, or you're a frail person, or you have other conditions, or you're having other symptoms, you should get medical attention.
We've been hearing about it, you know, that it does actually damage the lungs. Let's talk about that. What does it do to the lungs, and can the lungs recover from that and heal, or is there like scarring?
So there's a lot of, I have to preface this by saying things are changing every day. So it causes something called ARDS. ARDS stands for acute respiratory distress syndrome. This is a condition where the lung becomes inflamed to the point that you're unable to, you know, it's not able to do its job in extracting oxygen. It looks like on imaging, like severe bilateral pneumonia. So our lungs, just to step back, are a series of tree branches, right? They're air pipes, bronchioles. They get smaller and smaller and smaller. And if you imagine a tree with the stems getting smaller and smaller and smaller, at the end of each one, there's a leaf. Those leaves in our lungs are called alveoli. Those are like little microscopic air pockets with a blood vessel surrounding them. And basically it makes it to that pocket, and the body is able to extract the oxygen from air and carbon dioxide that we make in metabolism, and then we exhale that air and vice and so back and forth, okay? At our peak as human beings at around age 26, we have 300 million of these alveoli throughout our lungs. As we get older, they get more damaged, we get less. Now, this disease, you know, causes damage to those alveoli. We call it diffuse alveolar damage. Right? And so the body, you get the air in there, but there's no way for the body to grab the oxygen. And so you have to resort to giving 100% oxygen. So the lung is not efficient. And the worse the efficiency is, the worse the disease is. So that's an acute setting. So what we do with being on the ventilator and other modalities is we're just trying to buy time, right? We're trying to let this inflammation pass by so that the lung will recover. Now, the long term, what we know of ARDS patients from other conditions such as the flu and regular pneumonias is if you give them enough time, they do recover. You know, the Canadians have a big study about 10 years ago, looked at patients after they got discharged from the hospital, those who had severe ARDS. And 6 months later, for the most part, most lungs were recovered back to their pre-illness levels. So that's the good news there. Now, is this thing the same way as our typical ARDS? That is the big question, and it's hard to say. The problem is, for us in the U.S., it's still kind of soon. A lot of these patients, obviously, they're not 6 months later, so we cannot tell I can tell you anecdotally from the ones I've taken care of is the lung does seem to recover. And so if you're just able to get through that acute phase, and so we're hoping that we're not seeing as much of a long-term impact on the lung. Now, the problem is the long-term impact on the other parts of the body. You remember, some of these patients are on the vent for 20 and 30 and even longer days. They're paralyzed sometimes. They have to give them paralytics as part of that. They're heavily sedated. They go into kidney failure. They go into heart failure. They get infections. They get IVs throughout them. So a lot of these patients are so deconditioned. They're so weak. They're so debilitated that they require a very prolonged rehabilitation process. And that sometimes is the thing that hurts most patients in the long term, not necessarily the lungs.
I had heard that anti-inflammatories, over-the-counter ones, are not necessarily a good idea when you're dealing with this. Is that true?
Yeah. Yes. Let me explain. So, so basically, I think the big challenge is someone has symptoms. You know, you have a cough, a sore throat, and what you do is you pop Advils or ibuprofens or leaves or aspirins one after the other, which does help curb the symptoms. So your fever will go down for sure. Your maybe body aches will go down. Maybe even your cough, if you take cough suppressants, will go down, but it's doing nothing to treat that disease. So what may end up happening is that you're presenting at the later stage, right? So you've just subdued the symptoms. Your disease is still progressing because these anti-inflammatories are not doing anything to control the disease. And then you end up showing at a later stage in a much sicker condition. We've known about this in multiple other conditions for a long time, you know, conditions that initially present with inflammation. What we don't know is, I know, and, you know, they're recommending against the use of NSAIDs for that purpose. So we usually tell people you can use Tylenol, which is just helps the fevers, but not necessarily an anti-inflammatory, mostly because if you're getting sicker, it's better to know sooner than wait until the last second when you're coming into the ICU crashing because you've came in at day five rather than day three or things of that nature. But we don't know if it's a cause and effect. So I need to caution people about, you know, that all these drugs are bad and they're causing COVID. They're not. They're not causing the illness, as far as we know at this stage. But they're likely contributing to people coming in later.
So I'm sensing that the jumping off point or the delineation line is when you have the symptoms, you get the fever and that's fine, and body aches, okay. But when you start having issues with breathing and your lungs, that's when you got to start deciding to go to the hospital. Right? Did I get that right?
Yes. I mean, I would say for most people. But when in doubt, say if you're a 90-year-old person, if you have significant heart disease, if you're a patient who had received transplants, your immune system is compromised, you know, you should have a lower threshold for checking in with your doctors. But for most people who are otherwise healthy, I think, you know, having trouble breathing, having trouble with your breath or having low oxygen level, having dizziness, you know, lightheadedness, these kind of things, I think would warrant an evaluation.
Is an off-the-wall kind of question. If people are having that kind of those issues, breathing issues, is there any benefits from steam? You know, you put those things over your face or you go into a steam bath?
Yeah, I mean, it helps people who have a sort of reactive airway disease, sort of like an asthmatic thing. Sometimes it helps people who have phlegm to help loosen up the phlegm. It wouldn't hurt you, as far as we can tell. It's something to try as long as you haven't had a bad reaction to that in the past.
All right, so let's review here. So if you're a relatively healthy person with small issues or no issues, you're pretty much in good shape if you contract this. I mean, you know, you want to pay attention to it.
Yeah.
But if you've got issues, especially breathing and lung issues, you don't want to treat this lightly. You want to immediately take action, right?
Absolutely. I mean, because what was interesting in some of the patients is they look okay, sort of marginal. I've taken care of you. They would look okay for a day or two or three. They're sitting in the ward and you're contemplating, should they send them home? Should they keep them? And then one day things go crashing down. You know, they get very sick very quickly. So we had to develop protocols for how to treat them a lot more aggressively than we would with other patients, because once you go down that decline, it's sort of a very impressive and very concerning pattern where within 24 hours, they go from, you know, talking to you and eating lunch to barely sticking to life. And like I said, the more frail you are, the more medical problems you have, the longer your medication list, the more at risk you are. Now, healthier folks can probably tolerate things more, but there's other things that I think they need to be close attention to, because we all have parents and, you know, family members who may not be in a good shape as we are. And that's when it becomes very dangerous. So you have the disease, you have a little bit of fever, you have a little sore throat, but you're probably going to do okay. But then you're giving it to your mom and to your grandmother and to your uncle and to little kids in your household, and you have to be very careful that you either self-isolate if you're having any of those symptoms, or get yourself checked to see if you have that or other viruses.
Let me ask you a quick question before we go about that. If you had it and recovered from it, are you still able to pass it on to somebody?
So the virus may still be in your system even after you recovered. And this is the thing where they're studying it right now. And initially we thought once you have 2 weeks, you're set. But I can tell you we have patients in one of our hospitals right now that are still positive for the virus even 20-some days after they were first diagnosed.
Wow.
No, they're usually sicker patients, but so we don't know. So in general, that is one of the reasons the recommendations now we all have to wear face covering or masks, is because, again, it's not to protect us from someone else, but to protect others from us if we have it. So, the mask, if I'm wearing a mask and you're wearing a mask, if one of us has it, the chances that you'll get it is much lower, especially if you practice hand hygiene and social distancing. And those are the kind of things I think, even as we open up our economy and open up our shops and restaurants, that we need to be cognizant of. This virus is not going anywhere anytime soon. It is still going to circulate in our community. And we need to be sort of careful, sort of a new normal. We have to exercise caution.
Right. Err on the side of caution, right, doctor?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Well, I think you've given some things to think about. If you're relatively healthy, it doesn't mean you can just not worry about it. But just, do your due diligence, wash your hands, be cognizant of everyone around you. And I think
yes,
we'll just do fine. All right. So, Dr. Ashraf Luckman, thank you so much for being on Sunny Across Central Florida.
Thank you for having me.
It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/sportsfan and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.